the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to fight this evil.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. The headline in the New York Times, dated a couple days ago, two classes divided by I do. And it's a long story. It goes into great depth about how it is that if you're married, and this is just in terms of pure statistics, if you're married and if you stay married, you tend and your kids tend to do better economically. Now, this may come as no surprise to you, but it appears to come as a surprise to the New York Times and the editorial staff there. Joining us to talk about this story and the facts behind them, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
What was your take on this New York Times story?
Well, I'll tell you, we've known this for some time, actually. You know, a number of the family scholars have discovered that the biggest single determination, or one of the big determinants of whether you're poor, is whether your parents are married to each other and whether they stay married, you know. And the class divide is happening around the question of whether you get married or not. So you could look at it this way. You could say that the reluctance to marry is something that started in the lower classes as part of the result of welfare rules and things like that, but that is kind of creeping up into the middle class now. And so now the people who are most likely to have an Ozzie and Harriet lifestyle are the most highly educated professional women. These are the women who get married, stay married, have kids inside marriage. The difference between them and Ozzie and Harriet is that they don't get started until they're 30 instead of getting started at maybe 20 or 22 the way Ozzie and Harriet would have back in the 50s. So it's very interesting that the very class of people who've been trying to tell us that marriage is this trap for women that is going to be oppressive and so on, these are the women who are getting married and staying married before they have kids. And all the people who are kind of struggling with alternative lifestyles are poorer people, and they are struggling. They're poor as a result of it, and they're poor going in, and they stay poor as a result of not having the opportunity to really collaborate with a spouse for the long term project of raising kids. So the basic facts didn't surprise me. I don't know what the New York Times. Who knows what they're actually thinking, but I suppose it's good, better late than never, that they start to figure that out.
Is this just further proof to you, Jennifer, that sex sans marriage and raising children outside of marriage as well, when it can be avoided, obviously, is a bad idea all along and a failed experiment in American sexual history?
Do you know what, Todd? I think that's a very good way to put it. I think the idea of single motherhood as an alternative lifestyle choice with no particular negative consequences, that idea is a failed experiment. I think we have plenty of evidence now to know that that is a really bad idea. And it's a worse idea the lower you go and down the income ladder, down in the educational and income ladder. The poorer you are, the more you really need to have a stable, long-term collaboration with your child's other parent, you know, because the fact is that kind of collaboration is constructive and productive. it means that that the mother and father work together, number one. Number two, it typically means that the man works harder. Married men who are fathers work harder than other men. You know, that's been shown numerous times. It's not just a selection effect. For those of you driving around your cars and getting hysterical about me saying this, don't drive off the road. Yes, they've checked for whether it's a selection effect. You know, it's not just that only good guys get married and have kids and losers don't get married. No, it's that when a man marries and becomes a father, he becomes more focused and more serious. He works harder. He listens to his wife. You know, he does less fooling around with his buddies. You know, he's got a reason to work in a way that he doesn't have when he is either, you know, just an unmarried father, you know, kind of spraying his sperm around town, or whether he's a single guy without any kids, but who's basically just, you know, taking care of his boat and his fast car, or whatever his hobbies might be. You know, so that idea that that fathers are more productive when they are married fathers, that men become more productive, and in many different dimensions, that is a quite well documented fact. So for a bunch of reasons, marriage is really the right context for childbearing. And if, you know, honestly, let's get the basic biology here. If marriage is the right context for childbearing, it really ought to be the preferred context for sexual activity itself, because after all, sex does make babies, you know. So if you want to get it right, you really ought to get married, then have sex, then have babies. So that's the right order to get this done.
Now, I wanted your thoughts on what is, it's part of this story, obviously, and it's interconnected with this story, but it's a story in and of itself, and that is the dramatic, the mercurial rise of out-of-wedlock births, especially among people with less education, less income.
Yes, well, see, that's a trend that's been going on, you know, really since the late 1960s, you know, I have to say that there are a couple of things driving that. One is the widespread availability of contraception, but also the way in which contraception has been promoted, Todd. You know, people have developed this idea that sex is a recreational activity that doesn't have any social consequences and that sex is basically sterile. So the existence of contraception with abortion as a backup plan has led people to be sexually active in contexts that really can't support a pregnancy. You know, people feel safe having sex with whoever, you know, some guy they met at a bar or whatever. And that's a context that cannot possibly support a pregnancy. And so when contraception fails, which, you know, if you use it often enough, eventually it will fail. That's the thing people never seem to want to bring out. You know, if you roll the dice enough times, sooner or later you're going to end up with the result that that the unlikely thing has happened and that you're pregnant. When that happens, when the contraception fails, and you're in this situation that really can't sustain a pregnancy, you've really got two choices. You have the baby, in which case you become a single mom because the guy's not, you know, a suitable marriage partner for whatever reason, or you have an abortion. You know, those are the kind of paths that people have wound up on. Really, as a result of what I would call the ideology of contraception, which says that that sex is intrinsically a sterile activity, and you can have a baby if you want one. If you have quirky lifestyle preferences, you can have a baby kind of as an afterthought. But you're basically entitled to have as much sex as you want without a baby ever showing up. So that mentality has driven people to do things that really don't make sense as a long-term plan, and so you end up with single motherhood and abortion as the backup plans. And now that's become so widespread and so socially acceptable that it isn't even a backup plan. It's, oh, you're pregnant. Oh, well, you know, why not have the baby? You know, people have adapted to that as a new social reality, but it isn't any more socially constructive today than it was in 1965, honestly.
Jen, next week, the Ruth Institute's going to kick off its annual It Takes a Family to Raise a Village conference. Tell us a little bit about it, about a minute here.
Well, Todd, we're really excited. We're having people from all over the country and from Latin America coming to this year's It Takes a Family to Raise a Village conference. out here in San Diego. And if people want to be part of it, they can contribute online to help support the conference. It's a little late for people in the Midwest to come on out, but if they really want to, there might be a way to make that happen. But you need to go to ruthinstitute.org, and there's an ITAF icon on the upper right-hand corner of the homepage of ruthinstitute.org, and just click on there and you'll see all the fabulous speakers that we have, all the fabulous events that we're having. We'll be having, at the very end of the conference, the closing event will be a conversation on the definition of marriage featuring myself and Professor Robert Gagnon, defending man-woman marriage, and people defending a genderless version of marriage, the so-called same-sex marriage, will be Bishop Gene Robinson of the openly gay bishop of the Episcopal Church. That's who we'll be debating on the other side. So that'll be a very exciting close to our event.
Now you're making me sorry that I didn't sign up to go out for that. Plus, I get to go to San Diego. Sounds like a great lineup. Folks, you can find out more about It Takes a Family to Raise a Village. That little debate at the end probably worth the entire trip for you. It's July the 26th through the 29th in San Diego, and you can find out about it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. We're going to have you on real soon, Jen, to find out how that little debate with you and Dr. Gagnon and the bishop went. Thanks for being our guest.
You're welcome.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk about two Old Testament prophets being remembered this week by the church, Ezekiel with Dr. Nathan Jastrom and Elijah with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Then on Thursday, we'll discuss Jesus feeding the 5,000. Pastor Mark Nebel will be part of our pastor's roundtable. Also on Thursday, we'll continue our series on the historic liturgy, talking with Pastor Will Whedon about what are we going to be talking about? I think we'll be talking about what comes after the intro. That would probably be the collect and the readings. That's next time. That's Thursday on Issues Etc. If you have never supported Issues Etc., this worldwide outreach, before, you know we are entirely listener-supported. We're looking for first-time donors, people who have never given anything to Issues Etc. before but have enjoyed listening to it for years. If you're one of those, and I know many of you are, no problem. You can become a first-time donor, and as a way of saying thank you, we will send you the new Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mouse pad. You can donate online securely, issuesetc.org, click donate. You can also make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. That's Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for thinking of us during the challenging summer months, and thanks for thinking about becoming a first-time supporter of Issues Etc. Well, thank you with the Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mousepad. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hi, this is Pastor Dan Kistler of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Pacifica, California. A small congregation on the Pacific Coast just south of San Francisco, we invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation that He won for us on the cross and now delivers to us through His Word, baptism, and the Lord's Supper. For more information about us or for free downloadable sermons, visit our website at oursaviorspacifica.com. God's peace be with you always in our Savior, Jesus Christ.
Thanks for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. through the charitable grant program Thrivent Choice. We received more than $15,000 last year through Thrivent Choice. Our goal this year is to raise more than $20,000 through Thrivent Choice. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio, look for the Thrivent logo under the donate page at issuesetc.org. Please support Issues Etc. in 2012 with Thrivent Choice.